Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yar!
Today is April 15th, and this is episode 156. Catching up is hard to do. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're going to be catching up on some of the interesting news that has come up since our last episode, so that we can sort of clear the slate for a bigger episode in the next week or two. We're going to dive right into that today. Slaggy, do you want to take it away?
Yes, our first follow-up comes in the form of DLC costume announcements for the rhythm games Persona 3 Dancing Moon Knight and Persona 5 Dancing Star Knight. Persona 3 Dancing Moon Knight will be getting some Virtua Fighter-themed costumes. Persona 5 Dancing Star Knight is getting Yakuza-themed costumes. And also for Morgana, that cat who tells you to go to bed, they are getting a Sonic costume.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yes, of course, these will be released as DLC. There's no release date announced yet.
Yeah, and the games DLC themselves will be releasing in Japan on May 24th on PS4 and PS Vita. We also have word here that fan favorite Metal Max Xeno will be releasing Westward in the fall of 2018 for the PlayStation 4. We also have word here that Nobunaga's Ambition Taishi will be getting a localization on PS4 and PC this upcoming June.
Campo Santo is bringing their acclaimed first-person mystery adventure game Firewatch to the Nintendo Switch.
Ooh, now that's very exciting, and it will be releasing on the Switch this spring. We also have word of some upcoming, exciting backwards compatibility announcements for the Xbox One's backwards compatibility program. This upcoming week, the following original Xbox games will be playable on the Xbox One. This is Blinks the Time Sweeper, Breakdown, Conquer Live and Reloaded, The Elder Scrolls III Morrowind, Hunter the Reckoning, Jade Empire, Panzer Dragoon Orta, and SSX3. 2 weeks later, on April 26th, the following games will become playable for backwards compatibility: Destroy All Humans, Full Spectrum Warrior, Mercenaries Playground of Destruction, MX Unleashed, Panzer Elite Action Fields of Glory, Star Wars Battlefront, Star Wars Battlefront 2, Star Wars Jedi Knight Jedi Academy, Star Wars Jedi Starfighter, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic 2, The Sith Lords, and Star Wars Republic Commando.
See Star Wars again.
Star Wars.
I don't know, she just came up to me and started talking about Star Wars.
As well as that, a handful of 360 games got some Xbox One X enhancements. And of course, you know, these are always exciting because typically we see these 360 games get the Xbox One X enhancements. It means they're going to be running at 4K, they're going to have like rock solid frame rates going on, they're sometimes going to have like improved texture work. And these games were Darksiders, Gears of War 2, Portal 2, Red Dead Redemption, Sonic Generations, and Star Wars The Force Unleashed.
See Star Wars again.
Star Wars.
I'm surprised there's no Borderlands 2.
Of these enhanced games, the only one that I have actually installed on my Xbox One X is Red Dead Redemption. But I can say, holy shit, that game sings at 4K. It just looks beautiful. There are some obvious signs that it's like a 360 game, obviously. But at the same time, you know, I hear a lot of people talk about these enhancements as almost like a free HD upgrade or remaster, and I kind of have to agree, like, Red Dead in particular looks like a much better game than it did on the 360 itself. Slaggy, do you have any thoughts on these enhanced 360 games or any of the original Xbox backwards compatibility announcements?
I just think it's cool that, you know, Microsoft is continuing to support this backwards compatibility push that originally was not part of the concept they had for Xbox One. So I think it's good that they listened to what people wanted, and it's probably, you know, worked out well for them.
Well, and, you know, they have said that based on the strong response they've had to this announcement and some of the previous announcements, They have indicated that that will be influencing the direction the Xbox brand moves in the future. So fingers crossed that, you know, all of these 360 and Xbox One games are just going to be forever playable on future Xbox consoles. That, for me, would definitely keep me buying Xbox hardware. This is actually something that I lament a lot, that there are some PS3 games in particular that I would love to revisit, but I just don't want to dig out my PS3. With my Xbox One, that's not really an issue. A lot of my favorite 360 games I can actually just play on my Xbox One now, and, you know, that number of games just continues to grow. It's really impressive, and I'm actually really excited this week to revisit original Xbox classic Panzer Dragoon Orta.
Yeah.
So I'm super stoked.
The Pokemon Company has revealed the new mythical Pokemon, Zeraora. Zeraora is the Thunderclap Pokemon, an electric type, and we don't have any information yet on how this Pokemon may be available, but, you know, stay posted.
Stay posted. Yeah, he looks like an electric kitty Lucario, and I'm super here for it, so...
excuse me, mythical Pokemon are genderless. Please use the they pronoun.
We also have word here that the upcoming Disgaea Hour of Darkness HD remake will be known in Japan as Disgaea Refine. It is going to be releasing in Japan on PS4 and Switch on July 26th, 2018. It appears to be using some of the Disgaea 5 art assets to reinvigorate this well-loved strategy classic. Saigi, will you be hopping in on this?
This would probably be a good time to finally properly give the series its due. I've never, you know, really quite invested the time that I should have.
Yeah, no, I'm a huge fan of this series, so I will definitely be picking it up. And I would encourage anyone who's been curious about Disgaea, like Slaggy, I think this might be a good time to hop in.
Yeah. We have news that Metal Slug Double Cross, Double X.
I actually think this one might be Double X.
Double X. It does say Double X. I don't know if it's Double Cross. Anyways, at PAX East, SNK announced that Metal Gear Double X from the PSP will be coming to PS4 this summer.
Yeah, this is exciting. You know, it was ostensibly a port of Metal Slug 7 on the DS, but it actually added some new playable characters, including Leona from King of Fighters is like a DLC character. It was reasonably well liked, and I think that it getting a port is a really exciting thing. So yeah. If you're a fan of Metal Slug, I would definitely recommend you check out this sort of odd duck among the bunch.
Yeah, they look cool. I'd like to see some more POC or something characters, but the character designs look pretty cool other than that.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically a complaint we can make and do make toward a lot of Japanese-made games. We also have word here of some upcoming new DLC for Final Fantasy 15. This is apparently going to be sort of the final wrap-up of Final Fantasy 15. This summer, in 2018, we will be seeing a release of a standalone version of the Comrades multiplayer mode.
Interesting.
As well as two updates to Comrades that are meant to add more content and, you know, more stuff generally. But then, in 2019, in the beginning of the year, in the winter, we're going to be getting Episode 1, Arden, The Conflict of the Sage, which is going to portray the struggles of Arden and witness the resentment he harbored toward Lucis for over 2,000 years.
Oh my god, spoilers.
As well as his clashes with the Astrals. That game has been out for more than a year. If you care...
I'm joking.
We also are getting episode side story, Aranea, The Beginning of the End. This is a side story about the Star Scourge depicted from Niflheim's perspective. The final day of the Empire turns out to be Aranea's worst day.
That sucks.
This
for
is
her.
Due out in early spring of 2019. As well as spring 2019, we'll be getting episode 2, Luna Freya, The Freedom of Choice. This is a story about Luna's fate, which not even death can free her from. Her battle to save the one she loves overturns the destiny dealt to the Lucian King. And last, and probably not least, is episode 3, Noctis, The Final Strike. Parting ways with the Astrals, Noctis embarks upon his final battle in order to attain the ideal future for all of his people. Also due out in spring 2019. This has, of course, been a very hot topic among the fan base. In particular, Noctis, the Final Strike, appears to be an all-new ending for Final Fantasy XV.
Oh.
You know, we did get some hints and teases last year that, you know, maybe they would consider revisiting the ending and giving the game a happier ending. Quite a few people are excited and or afraid that this might be exactly that. Slaggy, I know that Final Fantasy XV was a game that you enjoyed, but some of the DLC since then has left you a little lukewarm, had you sort of feeling like you wish you had played the final version of the game. How do these announcements sit for you?
At this point, I'll probably just wait until it's content complete and, you know, then revisit it.
And how would you feel about them changing the ending?
You know, they did it with Mass Effect 3, so, and that worked out fine.
All right.
I think my hope would be that, like, with Mass Effect 3, what they did, they didn't change the ending of Mass Effect 3. They added more clarity, and I guess in certain, you know, aspects, depending on which choice you made, there was a little more hope, you know, if certain things lined up. I mean, that's been out as long as Game Boy's been out, literally, so, you know, the parts where it's possible that Shepard has survived, so, you know, I think that's what I would want from this, just like something that offers a little more clarity and perhaps a glimmer of hope for people who want to see the bros reunited or something. I don't know.
That sounds fair. We also have a very exciting announcement here. This is Etrian Odyssey Cross.
See, now this one is a cross because it says the word cross.
This was announced for 3DS. It is a crossover title releasing in Japan on August 2nd, featuring 19 classes, the vast majority of all of the classes from the entire series, as well as a new hero class. So, of course, this is very exciting. You know, obviously, the Etrian Odyssey series is super well-loved at this point. It has a huge fandom, and while I certainly wish we were getting away from the 3DS as a platform, I bet you all knew I was going to say that, this game does look really quite good, and I am excited to see more of it.
Yep, guess we gotta still keep that 3DS out for a while.
Yeah. We also have word here that Mega Man X Legacy Collection 1 and 2 will be launching in the West on July 24th.
Okay, now this one is an X.
Yes, Mega Man X Legacy Collection 1 and 2. It's going to be launching July 24th in the West for PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Legacy Collection 1 is going to include Mega Man X, Mega Man X 2, Mega Man X 3, and Mega Man X 4. Legacy Collection 2 will have X5, 6, 7, and 8. They're going to be available as separate purchases for $20 each or a retail bundle for $40. There's also going to be an interesting new mode called the X Challenge, and this probably should be cross-challenge. Basically, you will be fighting multiple bosses at a time. And something that's really cool about this feature is that you'll actually be fighting potentially bosses from, like, different games. The release trailer was teasing a fight with Chill Penguin and Frost Walrus at the same time.
Cool. I always call him Chill Penguino.
Fair. So, you know, this kind of thing is actually exactly what, like, folks like me get really into. Like, it's not a challenge that could possibly exist in the original game, but it will be super fun to play, to do score, time attacks, and since there will be leaderboards in the game, you know, expect to compete with your friends. If we're not friends on Switch, we probably should be before July 24th, because I'm gonna be posting my scores.
Show off.
We have some other interesting release date news. We have word here that Cavia's classic Xbox 360 action shooter Bullet Witch coming to the PC via Steam on April 25th.
Don't fuck with a Bullet Witch.
We have Border Break coming to PS4 on August 2nd in Japan. This is, of course, the free-to-play mecha action game that a lot of us have been very excited to finally see come home. Disgaea 5 Complete will be coming to PC via Steam on May 7th, 2018. SNK Heroines Tag Team Frenzy will be releasing September 7th. Marvel's Spider-Man will be releasing exclusively on the PS4 on September 7th. Dragon Quest XI will be releasing in North America on PS4 and PC on September 4th. Unfortunately, the 3DS version will not be releasing in North America. This is probably the one time you will hear me complain about the lack of a 3DS version. Square Enix has stated that this is because they had felt that the retro-styled graphics of that version do not have like an interest in sort of the Western territories, particularly, you know, North America, Europe, etc. This is, of course, a major bummer for me. I'm not going to play Dragon Quest XI on PS4, so I will be waiting for the Switch version, which is apparently still planning to release much later in both Japan and Western territories. Of course, that confirmation that they will eventually release the Switch version in Western territories is nice. Unfortunately, Square Enix has finally confirmed the Switch version is based on the PS4 version, which, you know, I could go either way on. We also got word that the reason for this lengthy delay is because they're having to completely rebuild the game on the most recent version of the Unreal 4 engine, which is, of course, what the Switch supports. It apparently did not support the much earlier version of Unreal Engine 4 upon which the game was originally made. It's exciting to finally have all of this news about the Switch version of Dragon Quest XI, but I'm still pretty mad about the fact that we're only getting the PS4 version here. Definitely a major bummer. At least I should say the PS4 and PC versions here upon their original release. That sucks. I don't want to be tied to a chair for 80 hours for this game. Definitely super, super, super want it on a portable handheld platform, 3DS or Switch. Either way, I'm happy. Well, what do you think overall about Dragon Quest XI, Slaggy?
I'm also disappointed that we're not getting the 3DS version. I think it is bullshit that they think we don't like retro stuff. I mean, hello? Especially, you know, when it comes to Square Enix, anytime Final Fantasy XIV does a little Easter egg or something that's 8-bit or 16-bit, people freak out over it. So,
yeah, I feel like they should actually have, like, the marketing data for this. You know, there was a big uproar because Chrono Trigger recently released on the Steam platform for PC, and people were super mad because it only originally had support for, like, these, like, really horribly filtered sprites that didn't look right to most of us, to the point that just this week they finally, like, patched in an option to have just straight-up original SNES-style sprites. Like, how can y'all not know that we have strong feelings about sprites and, like, classic art design at this point? Like, there's definitely a market for this, Square Enix. Open your damn eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we also have the fantastic and exciting news that New Gundam Breaker will be releasing in Europe on June 22nd for PS4 and PC. That is, of course, just a single day after its release in Japan. We don't yet have word of a North American release, but it's easy to assume that it will be coming around that same window of time. And if it doesn't, import a European copy. It'll be in English. All right, all that having been said, unless you have anything else, Slaggy, it's time for some news.
It's time for some news.
News. News. News. Oh my God. News.
Oh my God, you want to start us off?
Yeah, I guess we could say this is some news because a lot of our favorite ghostly kitties appear to be coming back in Yo-Kai Watch 4 for the Nintendo Switch.
Jibanyan!
Yeah, I love Jibanyan and all his little kitty yokai friends. And the ones that aren't kitties, but especially the kitties. Yo-Kai Watch 4 for Switch is coming out in 2018. It will feature characters from the anime. I assume this is from the new sequel series that just started this season, but I'm not exactly sure.
Oh, the one that's like kind of spooky?
A little spookier, yeah. So we will see as far as any Western release. We still haven't gotten Yo-Kai Watch 3. So,
yeah.
I kind of wonder if they'll just skip it and release it with a different title over here. 4 over here as a different title, or, you know.
The irony is that Yo-Kai Watch 3 would have probably required, like, the least amount of work to localize.
Because it was set in America.
Because it was set in America, yeah. Either way, I just hope we get this release. Obviously, you know, a lot of people really surprised that Yo-Kai Watch 4 is going to be a Switch exclusive. People are expecting expecting it to at least be getting like a 3DS version or like a PS4 version, but it appears to just straight up be a Nintendo Switch exclusive. I will say, if they can get this out before we see any kind of Pokemon release, I actually think this game will do pretty well in Japan. The Yo-Kai Watch ship, it seems, has started to sail, but, you know, I think people are still hungry for Switch content, especially in Japan, where the Switch has now moved over 4 million units, which is a pretty big milestone, more than halfway caught up to the PS4 at this point in Japan alone. It's a pretty big deal how well the Switch is doing, and if Yo-Kai Watch is sort of the only game in that, like, monster collector niche in Japan this year, that's a hell of an opportunity for Yo-Kai Watch to become relevant again.
Yeah, it's just sad because I remember Yo-Kai Watch was designed to be something that would be kind of an evergreen title and platform franchise, and didn't quite do that.
Well, releasing new versions every year, and some years multiple times, like Yo-Kai Watch 3 had Sushi and Tempura both releasing like mid-late 2016, and then just a few months later, its third version, Sukiyaki, came out. So, like, they kind of milked the market a little hard there on that one, and I think that was a really bad call.
Yeah.
Hopefully the market has rebounded and there is hunger for some cute ghost kitties again. I also just want to say, I'm really hoping with Level 5 continuing their partnership with Nintendo, I want Chibanyan in Smash.
Oh my god, right? And then his final Smash can involve, like, a bus coming to smash everyone.
Because
he got hit by a bus, right?
And then, oh my gosh, could you imagine? Like, I just want to have a battle of, like, Pikachu versus Chibanyan. I don't know. I think it would be a big deal.
Yeah, Chibanyan would be a great addition for Smash.
We also have a very exciting announcement. The Nintendo Switch is going to be getting a compilation of SNK games. During SNK's panel at PAX East 2018, they announced this very exciting new compilation release. This is the SNK 40th Anniversary Collection. The SNK 40th Anniversary Collection is going to be focused on pre-Neo Geo SNK games. So this is very exciting to a very specific type of us. And in a really exciting twist, it's going to be including, where applicable, both arcade and console versions of games.
Oh.
So we're going to have stuff like Alpha Mission, Athena, Crystalis, Ikari Warriors, Ikari 3, Guerrilla War, POW, Prehistoric Isle, Psycho Soldier, Street Smart, TNK3, Vanguard, and Victory Road, as well as, apparently, many more to be announced. The SNK 40th Anniversary Collection will be releasing on Nintendo Switch in fall 2018, and that will be a worldwide release.
Cool.
We also have word here that Team Ladybug, whom you might be familiar with for their previous release, Shin Megami Tensei Synchronicity Prologue, which was a Jack Frost and Jack-O-Lantern side-scrolling Metroidvania game that was released as sort of an in-joke, are now working
on
it.
Did they actually make that a real game?
They ended up releasing it as like a just like 2-hour like playable demo type experience.
That's still better than nothing.
Yeah, yeah, it's really cool too. It feels really good. Like, if it were a full game, I would definitely buy it. But they are releasing a licensed Record of Lodoss War 2D Metroidvania. This is very exciting. Players will take control of Deedlit as she travels across many different stages, acquiring new power-ups and fighting ghosts and beasties.
Yes, best girl.
Right? So I'm really stoked about this. I like Record of Lodoss War a lot as a series. I like Team Ladybug's work a lot. And watching the announcement trailer for this, I was really shook. Like, they are clearly coming very specifically for Symphony of the Night. Like, Deedlit even animates very similar to the way Alucard did in that game. I'm just living for this. Saigi, did you watch the announcement trailer for this?
I didn't, but I will have to. And I wonder, does this mean that we're getting any new Lodoss War anime this year?
You know, I feel like we get little Lodoss things every few years. This in particular is set to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the franchise.
Oh boy.
I have to assume there will also be a 30th anniversary anime series, or at least OVA. And we will talk about that over on Anime Buoy at some point, probably.
AnimeBuoy.org.
We also got the announcement this morning that Valkyria Chronicles, the original one, will be getting a Nintendo Switch port. This is going to be releasing via the Nintendo eShop as Valkyria Chronicles for Nintendo Switch. It is going to be a $20 price point game. It will include all of the DLC for the game, and for at least for Japanese gamers, the Switch version of Valkyria Chronicles 4 will include a discount voucher to reduce the price of the game to 500 yen, or, you know, around $5. So that's super exciting. If you're a fan of Valkyria Chronicles, which you should be, we don't yet have word of a Western release of this port. However, the Valkyria Chronicles series is also very popular in the Western territories, so I would be shocked if we don't hear about this. I would think in the next couple of days. It's just, you know, this announcement was made on the weekend, like today, so Sega of America's offices are probably not even open today to announce any kind of localization. Saigi, will you take a dip into Valkyria Chronicles with Valkyria Chronicles for Nintendo Switch?
Sure.
Exciting.
Yeah.
You know what else is exciting?
Oh, all this news coming out of Sega Fest 2018?
Well, yeah, especially the word that Sega is going to be bringing its Sega Ages series to the Nintendo Switch. This is going to be done as a collection of over 15 titles. These titles will be available to download beginning this summer. M2 is going to be developing them as they have for previous Sega Ages releases, and we know of at least 5 of the releases that are going to be in this series, including the first two. So far we have confirmation of the original Sonic the Hedgehog, Thunder Force 4, and Phantasy Star, as well as Game Ground and the first Alex Kidd game.
Oh, cute.
Of course, what is also interesting is that M2 has already done a couple of interviews about this project, and they indicated as recently as today that Sega Saturn and Sega Dreamcast titles are potentially going to be included in the lineup for this stage of the Sega Ages project's lifespan, so long as these first 15 or so titles are supported by the market. So definitely pick these up. M2 are the best at what they're doing. The Sega Ages line in particular has always been fantastic, you know. M2 really goes the extra mile to make sure that these Sega Ages releases are like definitive, like archival quality versions of games. They will like straight up from scratch create like new modes and new options and items for these games that you can use in like special arrange modes. It's just like the best possible archival release of any of these games, and I am a huge fan. You know, they cover not just Genesis games, but Master System games, arcade games from like all of the various eras of, you know, Sega hardware. Just, I am shook at this announcement. I was previously upset that we weren't getting the most recent Sega Genesis collection, but this to me is way, way, way better. Like, the individual titles might be slightly more expensive, but they are also going to have so much love and care put into the craft. Like, this is going to be the best way to play any of these games moving forward, and I am fucking here for it. What do you think, Slaggy?
Yeah, you know, the Sega Ages collections, or not collection, but, you know, releases have always been great. So, you know, and I guess this maybe is kind of the answer to why we don't, you know, have Virtual Console. I'm wondering if maybe Nintendo is just preparing to do a similar thing, you know, a similar banner for themselves, instead of, you know, bothering with, oh, it's Virtual Console, you know, just like, I don't know.
Well, we'll see. I mean, the 3DS had Virtual Console and Virtual Console for Sega platforms like the Game Gear, and still had Sega Ages releases, you know, those Sega Classics 3D or whatever, like, were a Sega Ages line. So I don't see why both can't exist.
We necessarily need that Virtual Console, you know, banner anymore. Anyway, let's hope that enough love and care is also put into the Mega Drive Mini, which is a micro console that will be releasing sometime this year to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the original Mega Drive. You know, the other plug and play Genesis things that we've seen are notoriously pretty bad. So the fact that a Mega Drive Mini has been announced, that, you know, leads us to think that this will probably be, aside from something like a Sega Ages, you know, the best way to play these, we would hope.
Yeah, I have heard mixed things, you know. I know a lot of people who have told me that, you know, this release is going to have much better emulation quality. It's going to be removing, like, some of those other, I think the company that makes them is At Games. Apparently, they're, like, not going to going to have any of, like, the typical, like, at games, like, cell phone game level, like, rip-off, like, super basic games on it. It will just be Genesis games, which is great, but it also still sounds like at games are the ones making this, so, like...
Ooh.
Yeah, so...
So it's going to have poor sound emulation and...
But they do say that the emulation quality will be better on this release. For me, this remains a, I'll believe it when I see it, but at least they have said they are addressing that. Now, let me ask you, Slaggy, because I know that that was a huge red flag for you, but if they do address the emulation, is this something you'd be interested in?
Sure. I mean, I'm sure nothing's going to be quite as good as the NES Classic and SNES Classic, but, you know, not everyone cares about emulation quality like Nintendo does.
Right? Most fans don't even care that much. But then again, we do on this show, and if you're listening to this show, you may
possibly
not care as much as we do, but you might. We also had a Megaton announcement from Sega Fez 2018. This is Shenmue 1 and 2. This is going to be releasing in 2018. In Japan, it will be a PlayStation 4 exclusive, but worldwide, it will be releasing on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. So this is, of course, really exciting. The Shenmue series is very well loved, and I'm excited to revisit these games, even though it looks like they will be running at a higher resolution. Otherwise, they will not be changed too much. They will have classic and quote-unquote modern control schemes and apparently a new, more user-friendly user interface. Please look forward to it. We also got a new announcement of a game that is tentatively being called Shin Sakura Taisen, or New Sakura Wars. This is a all-new work that, quote-unquote, inherits the DNA of the series. I'm really excited about this. You know, I'm a huge Sakura Taisen fan, even though only one of them ever got an official English release, and that was So Long My Love, which came out in 2010 for the PS2 and Nintendo Wii. But it's had a bunch of, like, manga, anime TV series, an anime film. It got, you know, all kinds of, like, live stage plays and musicals in Japan. This was actually, for a minute, like, Sega's biggest IP. So it's really exciting to see them working to sort of bring it into the modern age of games, and I really, really hope it's successful and gets a localization for North America, because I would love to play more Sakura Taisen.
Yeah, the action platformer Iconoclast, which was released for PS4, Vita, and PC. Sorry, I laughed because it came out with Vita. It will be coming to Switch with a boss rush mode added to it.
Yes, I'm really excited about this because I'm a big fan of these kinds of Metroidvania-y action platformers always. I had actually been considering downloading it for Switch just because for Vita, because I really want to play it, but as I'm always complaining, I don't want to play it necessarily tethered to a chair or a specific TV or whatever. I'm really, really excited about this. I definitely can't wait to play it. I've heard nothing but good things about it, and now I don't have to download it on Vita. I can wait for Switch, so that's exciting.
Yeah, sorry, Vita.
We also got the announcement that this fall we'll be seeing the release of the Jackbox Party Pack 5. Only one game from Party Pack 5 has been revealed, but it is going to be a new 8-player iteration of You Don't Know Jack.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
We haven't had a new Jack since the first Jackbox, right?
Before that even, I believe.
Really? I thought
I don't think the first
Jackbox
has You Don't Know Jack.
I thought it did.
I don't think it does. I could be wrong. I'm probably wrong.
But either way, it's great to have another You Don't Know Jack in the works. The reveal trailer for it was really cute and, you know, silly, as you would expect from, you know, the Jackbox folks.
I just need more Cookie Masterson.
Well, yeah, I mean, I believe in the trailer it even says this is Cookie Masterson, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I need more Cookie Masterson. So, obviously we don't have, like, a platform announcement yet, but these games tend to be coming out on Switch, PS4, Xbox One, PC, Apple TV, and Android. Hopefully that continues to be the case.
Yes, I can't wait to see what else we get.
We also got the announcement of the return of a well-loved JRPG series. This is Wild Arms Million Memories. But before you get too excited. Unfortunately, this is going to be released as an iOS and Android game. Although, while mobile, it does not appear to be a social game. All indications are that this is going to be a classic-style Wild Arms games. The developers are specifically working to focus on keeping the aspects in line with the original series, and they are promising not to destroy the memories of Wild Arms that fans formed so long ago. I'm really...
For people who want to play this on a console, this is so MOBA gay.
Wow. Well, if it is a really well-received game, if it is like a real canon entry in the series and it gets a positive reception, I have no doubt it will get ports to Vita and Switch and PS4. So hopefully it's a good game and we can eventually play it on whatever platform we prefer.
Ooh, yeah.
Well, maybe not Ouya.
We have news that Spyro is
Ripto?
Coming back with the... Not that Spyro's really gone anywhere, but, you know, Spyro in recent years we associate with Skylanders series. But the Spyro Reignited Trilogy will be coming to PS4 and Xbox One. And, yeah, I mean, it looks, you know, looks great. You know, the Spyro games always were pretty cute, you know. And so this will have Spyro the Dragon, Spyro 2 Ripto's Rage, and Spyro Year of the Dragon fully remastered.
Yeah, the crazy thing is, like, this is like a whole remake. Like, they call it a remaster, but to me it would be more appropriate to call it a remake. Like, none of the original assets exist anymore. Like, they've all been completely redone in, like, modern day graphic styles. I think it actually looks really stunning. I'm just kind of bummed that we haven't seen an announcement for Nintendo Switch yet.
Yeah.
But I say yet because there are quite a few reasons to believe that we may at some point get a Switch port, so cross your fingers and don't stop believing.
Hold on to that feeling. And happy 20th birthday, Spyro. Next year we'll buy you a drink.
We also got the announcement of Ark Survival Evolved for Nintendo Switch. This port will be releasing in the fall of 2018. It was already playable at the recent PAX West or whatever, but the actual game announcement was at GDC 2018. Very excitingly, like, apparently the game has, like, demo is running very well already, like, comparable to the current gen experiences for this game. So, fingers crossed, you know, Ark Survival Evolved is a game that a lot of people liked a lot, but as long as the game is, like, a good port, that's going to be really great, even though I think maybe the fandom has kind of moved on from this game to some of, like, the Battle Royale type experiences.
Oh, yeah, Fortnite and...
Yeah, yeah, but...
PUBG.
Right? But definitely think there's an audience for this game on a portable console, so long as it plays well, so fingers crossed.
And another game coming to Switch, which seems like a natural fit, is Hyper Light Drifter. It will be coming this summer, and yeah, I mean, Hyper Light Drifter. A lot of people, I still haven't gotten around to it, but you know, a lot of people like that game, so.
Yeah, you know, it's a really fantastic game. I think the Switch is a great fit for it, you know. You would probably get a lot out of it, Slaggy, even though you would also get really frustrated because it can be pretty demanding. But, you know, it has a lot of those, like, puzzly Zelda type elements that you like in games, and it has a lot of, like, atmospheric touches and a lot of really cool things that it does with its art style.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to like.
You know what's funny? What was that game, Oceanhorn, the one that was supposed to basically be Wind Waker?
Yes.
Was not a fan of that.
Yeah, I played that on the phone, and I ended up not really enjoying it very much. I keep meaning to revisit one of, like, the console ports, because it's on Switch and everything.
Yeah,
now
I got the Switch demo and I was like, mm-mm.
But yeah, I it didn't do much for me on iOS, at least.
Just give me a Switch version of Wind Waker, please.
Well, with all of that having been said, let's dip into our Culture Club today. Culture Club, of course, is the segment where we take a look at some game-related stories or game industry-related stories that maybe aren't specifically about, like, game announcements or whatever, but we still think are worth talking about. So this first one is word that Shovel Knight has reached a new milestone of 2 million copies sold worldwide since its release in June of 2014. Something that was really exciting about this is that Yacht Club Games, the developers of the game, actually shared a sales breakdown by platform. The largest share of copies sold was on the Windows platform, with 24.4% of all copies sold, with the 3DS version very closely behind at 23.9%. But the very interesting thing is that the Switch version, which was the most recent version of the game to release, is already at 17.6% of all sales, so nearly a fifth of all sales on the Switch already. We also have the Wii U coming in at 14.3%, which means if you look at 3DS, Switch, and Wii U together, more than half of all of this game's sales have been on Nintendo platforms.
Well, I wonder what upcoming flagship release that Nintendo has coming up this year could include Shovel Knight in it.
Huh, I wonder. I wonder if we'll get to see Shovel Knight fight Jibanyan.
Oh, I wish.
Fingers crossed. There's a ton of interesting data over at Yacht Club Games' official website. We'll link you to it over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
So please take a look at that if you're interested. It's, again, there's just a ton of very interesting data and interesting, like, observations about what the data really means from Yacht Club Games' perspective. I think this is just a really, really cool way to, like, break all this information down. And it's the kind of insight that I think a lot of us really want, but usually don't get.
More people bought it for the Vita than on the Mac.
Ah, LOL. We also have word here of Treasure. This is, of course, the company best known for games like Gunstar Heroes, Silhouette Mirage, Radiant Silvergun, Ikaruga, Mischief Makers. They released a very teasing photo on Twitter, and basically it has two different Nintendo Switch systems, one with the screen like sort of in its normal horizontal orientation, and one in the vertical orientation that a lot of us are familiar with as like Tate or Tate, which, funny enough, you know, a lot of us read that as Tate, even though it should just be Tate, because it's actually meant to be shortening of rotate. You know, it's sort of like that aspect ratio that a lot of shmups play in.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, Treasure, in this very teasing tweet, talk about how, you know, they're experimenting with the Nintendo Switch. The vertical position is very slightly off and needs to be just a little wider. And then they note that there's some teases being reflected in the in this the photo on the screens of the Switches. And if you look at the Switches, you can see reflections of some posters for previous Treasure games, including Radiant Silvergun, Ikaruga, and Gunstar Heroes. So definitely very interesting. A lot of people think that Treasure is very specifically teasing Switch ports of at least Ikaruga and probably also Radiant Silvergun. I think this would be a perfect opportunity, especially for like Ikaruga, to play it in that Tate mode would be fantastic. I want to ask you, Sagi, what do you think about Treasure games potentially on the Switch?
I think they'd be a good fit. I'm honestly just surprised that you're not sitting over there squealing. I mean, like, the chance to play your beloved Ikaruga on Switch, like, how are you not squealing right now? Like, literally squealing.
I mean, I was when this news first hit, because this tweet was from last week or earlier this week.
Oh, right. I did seem to notice a bunch of dogs in my area had their ears perked up.
Yeah. No, I became in that moment a dog whistle. We also have word here that Square Enix is releasing a new Bring Arts series figure. But before you start tuning out, assuming that I'm talking about Noctis or Sora, I'm actually talking about Fei Fong Wong from Xenogears. Of course, this is super exciting. This is like a big like 20th anniversary celebration of Xenogears this year. We're getting a new soundtrack. We're getting a new like live orchestral concert with like original vocalists coming back in for the vocal songs. So it's only fitting that we're getting a ridiculously high quality action figure as well. This figure is going to be super poseable. Just really stunning likeness, going to come with like multiple changeable hands, heads, little items for you know, dressing him up. Not literally dressing him up, but I mean, like, if you're like playing with him as an action figure, like, you can make him hold a can of food, you know, for all your theming. So that's going to be exciting. It's going to be releasing in August. It's going to have a retail price of 7,344 yen, so like $70. But if you order it off of AmiAmi, right now they actually have it up for 25% off retail for their pre-orders. So it's like 5,500 yen. If you're a big fan of Xenogears, and I know some of you are, I would definitely check this out post-haste.
Have you already pre-ordered yours?
I have not, but I will. We also had a really fascinating interview in the latest issue of MCV Magazine. That is a gaming business magazine in the UK, and basically Nipponichi Software America and SNK appear to have a deal in place with Nintendo for the physical version of SNK Heroines Tag Team Frenzy. And it's actually really interesting because Nipponichi Software America's spokesperson who did this interview actually kind of got really shady about Sony and talked about how, you know, Nintendo was actually like the better of the two companies to work with, that Sony didn't seem to care about them because of their size. They've actually walked back a lot of that stuff. They've basically come out and said like, oh, we gave the wrong impression. I was just trying to give the interviewee a real sense of where we're at, not make official, like, on-the-record statements. So that's kind of shady. But basically, Nipponichi Software America originally was just going to be doing the PS4 version, and then Nipponichi Software America, Nintendo of Europe, and SNK all ended up meeting at Gamescom, and, you know, Nintendo wanted to work with SNK on an exclusive basis for that game. And as a result, that's why the physical version of SNK Heroines Tag Team Frenzy is exclusive to Nintendo Switch.
Oh.
They also indicated that there will be some more exclusive Switch SNK games in the future, which many people are assuming the 40th anniversary collection is one of those games.
Cool.
Ton of really interesting information in this interview, though, so you should actually read the whole thing. But it was just kind of a big kerfuffle when they came right out and said that Nintendo was more supportive and Sony these days doesn't really care about you if you're a Japanese developer, unless you're like a big AAA pub. A lot of people don't want to believe that. A lot of people don't want to think that Sony is falling into their own hubris. Definitely a very interesting, anytime we get these kinds of sort of really shady insights to the industry. Psyche, do you have any thoughts on any aspect of this?
No, just that I'm glad that Nipponichi Software is such a strong supporter of the Switch.
Excellent, excellent.
Okay, dude.
We also have word that the recent revival of the King's Knight franchise. This was King's Knight Wrath of the Dark Dragon, and it was a smartphone spinoff that was associated with the Final Fantasy 15 universe as like a game released in universe as a remake of an old NES action RPG. Is unfortunately going to be shutting down on June 26th. So that of course sucks if you're playing this game and enjoying it like me. Enjoy it while you can, I guess.
Yeah, I guess Noctis and his boys are going to have to go back to using their smartphones for Grindr or whatever the equivalent is in their world.
Right. Sorter. we also have word here, following up, I think, on a bit of a story that we maybe started last episode.
Yes.
That Billy Mitchell's record scores have all been removed from the Twin Galaxies leaderboards. This was, of course, following the dispute from earlier this year involving the method in which he was running his arcade emulators. They're also completely banning Mr. Mitchell from further participation in their leaderboards, which means that, you know, this guy who has had a movie made about him and his run for high score glory, his esports competition is officially over. He's done. His scores are no longer going to be recognized. This actually is going to really change King of Kong moving forward. Like, I'll never be able to watch that movie the same again, knowing all this.
I mean,
it just really sucks.
It's time for King of Kong 2, I think.
Well, I would, yeah, that would be very interesting.
I wonder if their children will ever have a rivalry and it could be King of Kong Jr.
Aw, that would be adorable. This is just really sad. You know, this was sort of like the forerunner to esports. Competitive gaming is definitely like very much a thing in 2018, and it just really sucks that this had to play out this way, because in a lot of ways, King of Kong could have been seen as like a documentation on like the start of this trend and this, you know, whole like scene. And now it's just Billy Mitchell is persona non grata, and that sucks.
He's just got to go back to, doesn't he have a hot sauce?
Yes, he does.
Guess he's got to go back to that hot sauce business.
Yeah.
But that's, it's crazy because, I mean, he has been, you know, he's been part of this for, since the 80s, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it's just crazy. Yeah, like, 82 was his original high score. So
wow.
It's just crazy. And, I mean, I know a lot of people have a lot of different feelings about Billy Mitchell, but it's just, like you said, it's very interesting and puts the context, puts that movie into context in a very different way. Apparently, he's been in featured in some other documentaries, including Chasing Ghosts, Beyond the Arcade, The King of Arcades, and Man vs. Snake, The Long and Twisted Tale of Nibbler. But yeah, if you haven't seen The King of Kong, really, a really interesting documentary. If you even just have a casual liking of Donkey Kong Arcade, just, it's really, really great. I'm going to have to check out some of those other ones, especially if Chasing Ghosts has to do with Pac-Man.
Excellent. Well, Saigi, I'd like you to take this next one, because you had actually said last night when we were talking in prep for this episode
that
you felt
Overwatch
we should...
Overwatch League is basically canceled?
That is exactly, yeah. So why don't you take this one?
Yeah, so this is just yet another ugly situation in the already very problematic overall Overwatch League. Now, I'm not trying to paint broad generalizations here, because I know there are legitimate players in the Overwatch League who are not being racist or homophobic, or as has come to light with the player Jonathan Dream Casper Sanchez, who now a former member of the Boston Uprising, has come to light that he was in communication in a adult fashion with underage girls. And now, some people will be like, oh, well, and the one girl, in her place, it was, you know, the age of consent, whatever. But, you know, basically the point is that this is a 21-year-old young man. Well, I mean, I don't want to say young man, but, you know, a 21-year-old man having sexy messages with high schoolers, trying to buying flights to have them come visit him, being like, send me nudes. And, you know, this is just really disgusting, predatory behavior. It doesn't matter. Some people might try to be like, oh, well, you know, the girls were into it. You know, it doesn't matter. It's still predatory behavior. And I'm sorry, if you are trying to defend this piece of trash, then I don't support you. It's just, again, I almost feel like calling it unfortunate is not right, but I mean, I think it's unfortunate in the sense that, you know, Overwatch itself is a great game. Sure, the player base has a lot of trash in it, but I mean, you know, why do you think that we've had so much discourse in the past, you know, 5, 6, 7 years about gamers are dead? You know, like, the whole idea of gamer culture and everything, it has a lot of toxicity in it, and it's just unfortunate that esports and, I mean, you know, there's a lot of situations in esports that, you know, are fine, and I mean, like, you know, overall, my experience is following the fighting game community, I'm not as closely as you, of course, I think there's been a lot of positive stories in the fighting games community, but it's just sad that, you know, a game like Overwatch, which, you know, Blizzard puts a lot of passion into, you know, Blizzard's a great company, a lot of great people play it, a lot of you play it, we play it, you know, I don't play it well, but, you know, a lot of people I know play it. Unfortunately, that the competitive scene has a lot of problems with it, and this is just the latest, and so, you know, I kind of say, like, oh, Overwatch League is canceled, but, you know, obviously, you know, I'm being a little facetious there, but it's just like, you know, for something that's trying to, you know, get its name out there and, you know, be a serious part of the esports scene, this is yet another taint in its track record so far, you know? It's just, I feel really badly for, you know, the young women and the children, you know, I mean, you know, the teenage girls involved in this, that they were taken advantage of, and it's just, on one hand, I'm just, like, I want to say, like, I'm tired of hearing gross stuff happening from Overwatch League, but saying that I'm tired of it isn't fair to, you know, the victims in these situations. So, you know, it's, you know, I hope that we don't have to keep hearing things about this. Not because I'm just like, oh, I'm tired of it, but it's just like, it's gross that, you know, this is is what's happening.
Absolutely. And then last, but certainly not least, we have word here that Steam has changed their default privacy settings as of early this week. And, you know, this is one of those things where, particularly in light of all the Facebook stuff coming out right now, this seems like an unabashedly good thing. But one thing that needs to be noted is that without publicly viewable Steam profiles, and now Steam profiles by default will not be publicly viewable, resources like Steam Spy will no longer work. Steam Spy basically tallies up all of the publicly viewable Steam profiles in order to estimate game sales on Steam. The thing is, some developers, especially smaller ones, they don't actually get this data from Steam. So even people who release games themselves rely on Steam Spy or apps like it in order to get like an accurate idea of how their game is selling. Dreamfall director Ragnar Tornquist in particular was on Twitter saying, you know,
that's a great name. I still think that's a great sounding name.
He was saying, you know, Steam Spy has been an invaluable tool for us, and more transparency in game sales would be great for the industry in general. We have game designer Andrew Crenshaw. Losing Steam Spy is terrible news for indie game devs. It was one of the few resources that small developers had for assessing the market. It also encouraged publishers to be transparent with their developers about sales figures. So basically, this is being viewed as a casualty of this push toward privacy, particularly in light of everything we've seen with Facebook recently. Mark Zuckerberg, of course, was just grilled by Congress this past week. It's a huge issue right now. And, you know, Sean Barrett, a developer who worked on the original Thief, as much as I like Steam Spy, making users' libraries hidden by default is 100% the right privacy call. And that's one of those things where, like, I agree with that. You know, a lot of folks have been noting that, like, probably retailers shouldn't be exposing people's purchase histories publicly by default, and I think that's true. But Steam Spy gave a lot of people in the industry tools that they desperately needed to make, like, good marketing choices, and it really, really sucks that people aren't gonna have access to that anymore. So, you know, it definitely sucks. I understand how and why it happened. It is probably for the best, but it's something that sucks and something that I think a lot of smaller indie devs are really going to feel over the next few months until they start figuring out new ways to assess the market and get a sense of how their games are going to perform and what they should be catering to.
Yeah, hopefully Steam and Valve, you know, obviously, hopefully Valve, you know, recognizes this and, you know, does something, you know, positive. Yeah, and what I was trying to say about Ragnar Tornquist is that I'm not trying to, like, other him and be like, oh, but Norwegian names do sound badass. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, with all of that having been said, it's time to start winding down by talking about what's up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
Slaggy, would you like to start this week?
Yeah, especially since I feel like my gaming habits have been a little slower as of late. You know, I'm trying to think back, and the last episode proper that we did was towards the end of March. You know, we did do our Kiki Kai Kai April Fool's episode, so, you know, check that out if you did not already. You know, also go over and check out Reading's Fundamentals Kiki Kai Kai episode 2 for the complete picture. So, thinking back to what I've been playing over the past few weeks, kind of nothing new. I did put a little more time into Planet Coaster, but honestly, once I started getting to some of the more medium difficulty scenarios that were available, it's not that they were too challenging, it's just that so many of them got focused on designing coasters that fit certain criteria, and ironically, although the game is called Planet Coaster, my appeal for those games has always been the sim elements and the, you know, management parts. I've never just figured out how to design a good coaster, no matter how much I've tried. So, like, I always rely on blueprints for coasters, which I know for some people that's completely the opposite reason of why they play. They're all about designing the coasters and everything. And yes, it's true that you can, you know, go on Steam Workshop and find...
For a minute, I thought you were talking about going to Steamworks. I was like, girl, what?
Excuse me.
But continue.
No, go on Steam Workshop and find blueprints that other players have made. made that, you know, fit the challenges. It's just, for me, it's kind of just like, you know, like, I find it more interesting when the challenges are about, like, you know, increase the park rating or, you know, find a, maintain a profit of this. You know, for me, that's about, that relies more on the management part of it. So, you know, I probably will go back and, you know, do it, especially just, you know, because every park has its own little flavor and, you know, that's kind of cool. And they did just put out a new content update with hotels. That's pretty cool. One thing I was trying to play around with was the scenario editor, but I just could not come up with layouts for a park I was happy with because I'm just, you know, kind of a perfectionist. And so I haven't quite, you know, I really want to do like a GameBuoy.park or, you know, some other types of parks as well, you know, like maybe like a winter theme park or a fantasy theme park or whatever. Like, you know, I definitely have ideas, or like a Wild West themed park, but I just have not, like, you know, when I've been playing around in the scenario editor, haven't been satisfied with anything that I've created with. So, you know, maybe I'll, since I've, you know, kind of taken a break from that over the past week or so, maybe it's time, you know, maybe I'll have some fresh ideas and see what I can come up with. Dabbling a little bit in Final Fantasy 14, that kind of has slowed down a little bit. There were some, you know, holiday events, so I was keeping up with that, but, you know, not a lot of people are really playing right now, and I think my subscription, because I use Krista to pay for it so that I can just reload it with my PayPal, so it's not like a recurring subscription for me. I think my subscription has lapsed, but that's not like, oh, I'm not going to come back, but, you know,
It
lapsed for the moment. I'll probably come back soon, but, you know, for the most part, I'm caught up on a lot of the content. I haven't done any of the Eureka stuff, but there were a lot of great announcements. We didn't really cover it today, but there were a lot of great announcements about patch 4.3. There's going to be a companion app coming, which is kind of like that old WoW app that they now discontinued, or, you know, the auction house thing that they discontinued from it. There's going to be a new deep dungeon in the next patch for players from 60 to 70, so that's really exciting. So even if I don't get quite back into it right away, I, you know, think I'll definitely, as that patch content comes out, you know, we'll dive back a little more into it. Not too much aside from that, aside from, you know, playing Smash over here at the SS Buoy. I did play a little more Monster Hunter with you and Trainer Sulker from the same Type Attack Bonus podcast. Tried out Insect Glaive and finally found that Insect Glaive just kind of felt right for me. I'm not quite acrobatic or aerio the acrobat with it yet, but there was one time where I did mount the monster, so that was cool, or a couple times actually. But just the right ratio of speed to damage, you know, like, it felt good. It's a lot of fun. Although I still don't quite know if I'm using my Kinsex correctly, so, you know, that was good to finally find a weapon in Monster Hunter World that worked for me. Although, you know, it's weird because I don't mind sitting at a PC to game, but, like, if I'm doing console gaming, I'd rather play on Switch, so I'm weird like that. What about you? What have you been playing?
Oh, man. Let's see. So, since we recorded our last episode, I did a playthrough of Kingdom Hearts Re-Chain of Memories. This is through the PS4 HD remixes, you know, 1.5 plus 2.5. I hadn't really done the Re-Chain of Memories version of Chain of Memories. I had really just done, like, the original GBA version. So it's cool to revisit it after all these years. Let's see. I also dug out Order of Ecclesia Castlevania for DS. I played through that since our last episode. So that was really cool. Checked out a couple of things on the eShop for the Switch, like the Punch-Out arcade port, arcade release, arcade classics or whatever. So that was cool to revisit.
Soda Popinski.
So in advance of next week, where multiple big games are coming out, you know, we have Labo coming this Friday, as well as the new God of War. I did want to pick up a game to play this week, though, so I picked up the new Attack on Titan game for Switch, and that's what I plan on playing through this week, but I haven't really started it yet, so I can't really comment on it, but definitely just kind of a lot of revisiting old favorites. You know, we have Kingdom Hearts 3 coming later this year, so I definitely need to step up my game and replay all of those Kingdom Hearts games pretty quick. And Castlevania is just because we haven't had a new Castlevania in a long time, so I wanted to revisit that. With all that having been said...
Mention what you were doing, like, literally last night after we watched Baychella.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I played through...
You basically played through almost all of Mega Man 2.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's like 20 minutes of gaming, though. I mean, you can blow through
like
that.
That's like 20 minutes of gaming.
If you know know what you're doing. It's just not hard. It's like when you talk about Mario Kart 8 and you're like, oh, we can't do 200cc. And I'm like, anything else is too easy and boring. That's how I feel about playing through Mega Man 2.
150cc is still my preferred speed.
That's how I feel about Mega Man 2. It's just easy and boring. Like, but it's fun. I mean, it's still enjoyable.
Boring, and then why'd you make me watch it?
Bitch, you were screaming. You were hella into it. Calm down.
I was like, ooh, you just served that robot master. Yes, honey.
All right, well, why don't you take us over to our social links?
Yeah, we pretty much been all quiet on the Twitter front for the most part, but we did get a response to our Kiki Kai Kai podcast from April Fools. Writer Blades over on Twitter said, y'all do the most every year, and we love and support you for it. Thank you.
Thank you. We love and support you, too.
And Clerical Errors on Twitter said, OMG, I just started a podcast about Hanafuda called Flower Child.
I see what you did there, and I like it.
That's extra. Kudos to you.
Excellent.
Well, if you would like to shout out to us, you can get us on, as Rob Robert says, the Twitter Z's or the Facebook Z's. We are at Twitter at GameBuoy.org.
At GameBuoy.org with the .org spelled out. D-O-T-O-R-G.
You're really stepping on my feet here.
You're really going slow here.
Slow. Bro, our mail is mailbuoy at gamebuoy.org. And thank you for your feedback, ratings, reviews, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play. You know, please let us know if there's somewhere else we should be. You can write to us anytime, mailbuoy at gamebuoy.org. You can talk about an old episode. You can talk about an episode that was 6 years ago. Happy 6th anniversary, by the way. We have not really officially done an anniversary episode, but I guess after a point, you just stop celebrating, don't you?
I suppose.
But we wouldn't have gotten this far without all y'all. In all seriousness, thank you for sticking with us. You know, we've had some vacations and work stuff and illness and, you know, life. Just yes. Life. So thanks for always sticking with us. And thanks to all of you podcasts out there who support us. You know, we definitely, it is a great podcasting community out there, and including what, Mike?
I just want to say, I clearly will continue to be paying for us to use the application that we do our live episodes through. So we will do another live episode soon. This has just been a really tough few weeks, but we will be doing something celebratory soon enough. So please look forward to that.
Definitely by the summer, if not sooner.
Indeed. So my shout outs, as ever and always, start with a mention of the Voice of Geeks Network over at VogNetwork.com, where you can hear us as well as such glamorous shows as Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female's perspective on the world's most popular MMO, as well as Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom we steal so many of our cues. I'd be remiss not to mention the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. I'd also like to call your attention to a few non-VOG shows, such as the Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, and their sister's show, X-Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. You should also check out the Astral Era podcast. Astral Era is a Final Fantasy XIV podcast focused on in-depth discussion of new content, game mechanics, story/lore, music, and of course, glamour, darling. You should also check out Slagkick's show, Reading is Fundamental, where myself, Slagkick, and Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio talk about the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race. Slaggy, take us a place.
I'm going to take you to a game bar where you can kick back and listen to the Stassi Staccato. I'm going to try that again. The Stassi, yes. It's not just Sassy, it's Stassi, darling.
Yeah, Stassi.
I hope they don't mind that. That's it now.
I need Stassi to become a new term on gay Twitter, like now.
It's like the Stassi version of the Stussy clothing brand. Stassi. The Stassi Staccato of Jeremiah, Tootsie, and Todd. And a crucial part of the Hunty Bunch, which is what we call our queer podcasting alliance. I'd also like to shout out to another member of the Hunty Bunch, which is Video Game Realness, serving up a gaming dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. Ooh, she's sloppy tonight. Sorry, I was up late watching Queen Beyonce slay at Coachella, so I'm a little running a little low on sleep. You know, VG Realm is doing a lot on Twitch these days, so go support them, look at their social medias. But also, when they do put up that occasional episode, we're like, yes! Give us that Stassi realness! I'd also like to shout out to the Magical Boys Podcast, a pop culture podcast from a queer perspective, as well as our allies over at the Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk, in the home of Yuna and Luna, the kitties!
Yes!
I think I vote that they should have a kitty stream of Yuna and Luna, a kitty cam. I'd also like to shout out to Anime Buoy, your port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. Anime Buoy is back. You know, we can't necessarily commit to a twice-monthly port of call, but we're definitely, you know, excited to have broadened it back. We maybe made the mistake of doing our, I mean, it was intentional, but our return episode was Kiki's Delivery Service, and with the Kiki Kai Kai going on, people might have not realized that actually it is a real episode about Kiki's Delivery Service. You know, we went and rewatched the classic Ghibli film. We're going to hopefully, within the next week or so, bring you an episode about some of the spring anime that's coming out, and, you know, there's a lot of exciting things in store in the anime world. I'd also like to shout out to Stabcast, which is the shortened form of the same type attack bonus podcast. Your twice-monthly look at the deeper worlds of Pokemon that Spike and I do with Trainer Sulker are also looking forward to getting that back on track, so please look forward to it. Our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated, the project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. They unfortunately closed their doors quite a while back, and you know, but we'll be remembering in that temple of time, the greatness that they did, and pour out a 40 in the Great Fairy Fountain.
Indeed, and so it goes. That is another episode down. We'll be back at you hopefully next week. I would really like to do an episode.
I'm like, nope, this was the last one, sorry.
Rude.
No.
I would love to do something about Labo next week.
I already told you that we need to call it Labo a Go-Go.
I was already planning to call it Labo a Go-Go because I've been playing Beautiful Joe, not like super recently, but like a month ago, and it's had me doing the whole Henshin a Go-Go baby every chance I get. Anyway,
well, in that case, look forward to Labo a Go-Go coming to a podcasting stream near you.
All that having been said, thank you this lovely Sunday evening for spending the time with us. I hope you've had half as much fun listening as we've had talking. Hopefully we will be back at you in 7 days or less, but until then, keep gaming,
keep gaming,
keep thinking,
keep thinking,
and see you, Space Cowboy.
And I'm glad you didn't postpone our recording of the podcast to go participate in Pokemon Community Day.
Yeah, that would be really insensitive to people who were planning to spend their days recording.
Pretty perfect puppies.